what's the probability of the church filing bankruptcy, and if they have all their money in Switzerland or other places, that anyone could actually ever get to it if the IRS goes in and moves in against them for large sums, which would take priority over in the city? Then do you think there's a chance that there would be any money left after that?
Absolutely, there will be money left, and I'll tell you why I believe that. If you have an individual who, you know, rips someone off or whatever and takes off to, like Vesco, takes off to Puerto Rico or wherever, there is probably substantial likelihood that he can run long enough. Eventually, the government, the justice catches up with it. And oftentimes, the government never even goes after criminals because they just know they eventually turn themselves in or fall over themselves, and they end up, justice gets done in the long run. Now, oftentimes, when you're dealing with individuals who are real clever, they can beat the system to a certain degree and hide money, and trying to get it from them is a very difficult proposition. But when you're dealing with thousands of people in a huge organization, and the level of scandal and ripoff that's taking place, and if the top of people are indicted, and if the truth begins to just start tumbling out, as it's been wont to do over years and various at various times in this litigation, and if it continues to do that, my assessment of the entire situation is that if you people became strong enough, solidified, unified, there would be so much momentum toward correcting the injustices, collecting the assets to satisfy all these problems, that the individual machinations and activities of the David Miscaviches to try to hide these funds will get lost in the overall effort of everyone, the demand to bring them back here. Such as, and there's a lot of precedent for this type of thing, among which are the situation involving Jones. Jones hid in Marcos, happening right now. Theoretically, for the, you know, to try to get all around the international laws, etc., try to get Marcos to return this money and prove the ownership of this real estate and get tied up in years in litigation. Theoretically, it could be a long, litigious battle for the Philippine government to do it. But that's not what's shaping up here. What's shaping up is that there's such a public outcry, so much momentum, and it's getting so spotlighted that the courts will rule, Marcos will probably give a lot of it back, and all I can suggest to you is that if Miscavige and Broker and the others are removed, there's new management, there's an effort to start to try to collect these problems, the funds will probably be brought back by people who are in control. And the amounts of money that a David Miscavige or whatever can hide, he may accomplish it, but the amount of money we're dealing with, I don't think it would be that great. And I think eventually the collective momentum of something like what you people are doing would be analogous to the Jonestown situation, where they got all the money back from these Swiss accounts, the Marco situation, and others. Mm-hmm. I think, that's how I read this litigation. I read it as enough people getting together, forcing the issue to a head in court, so that the rulings just begin to tumble out, that justice gets corrected. It may take time, but the more cohesive, the more energetic and directed your efforts are, the sooner you'll get rid of the management that is causing these problems, and the sooner that monies will be collected, distributed, tax problems taken care of, etc.
Yes.
I've got a question which has to do with international class members, like those in England, Europe, South Africa, Australia.
Mm-hmm.
As far as their tax situations go,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if they have similar situations or not.
Well, I don't either. I would say this. Some countries don't have income tax. For those countries that have income tax, of course, the income tax structure of every country varies so greatly, but I really can't say, except that I'll say this. In those countries where there are deductions allowed for tax-exempt nonprofit organizations, they're potentially in the same boat. Here, however, there's already been a trial. The judge has already issued this monstrous opinion. I encourage everyone to read it. I mean, I think it's 168 pages long or something.
Federal court?
federal tax court case.
We have it.
And it details in minutiae every reason why they lost their tax status. And, I mean, the thing is illustrative. I mean, it's informative, educational. And every country that has a similar tax system, the same thing could occur.
Here, it already has occurred, and you're already behind the eight ball.
Okay, but what is happening here could have an effect elsewhere? I mean, if there are people who've been fraudulently had to have their taxes, tax deductions.
Absolutely.
Right.
But in those tax systems, where they're given deductions based on nonprofit status, where it didn't operate as a tax, a nonprofit organization, absolutely.
I don't know if this is any of significance, but yesterday I got for the hundredth of time another call, and the tune seems to be changing yet. So it was the same person who called me up before, wanted to talk to me in friendly terms. Yesterday he said I had a few questions. So to make it short, the questions were, when did you resign? Did you write a resignation letter? Were you declared? Do you support Michael Flynn? Have you paid any money towards the suit? And are you intending to support? What practices are you using? Are you using LIH's tech? And are you altering LIH's tech? And by that time, I said, that's like Inquisition. It's none of your business. I refuse to answer. So I'm just mentioning that because the tune has changed. To me, that indicates that they're absolutely deadly afraid of this suit. So this is now the right time to do it. Do you read anything else into that?
Absolutely. They're calling my clients. They periodically they go through. And knowing how the GO used to work and how they think, and they get involved in these programs and they push the targets in the programs. Everyone runs around and to be accomplished yesterday and over the years I've seen this time in on all kinds of different operations. It just happens cyclically. Now they're in a more intense, the most intense effort that I have ever seen to go to all my clients, offering more money, making more scurrilous and outrageous representations than ever before, showing a greater level of desperation to settle the cases and try to resolve some of their problems without mandating the disclosure of the types of things that I want and that you people should want. In other words, settle with a particular person, push it under the rug, don't make us cough up the fact. That's what I see happening right now. For example, I believe that David Mayo is going to win this appeal. I'm extremely confident he's going to win it, and because the case is just so ridiculous. I believe that the church, if they're not already doing it, will go and offer something to David to forestall the Ninth Circuit from rendering the opinion that it's going to render, that the Church of Scientology cannot prohibit someone from practicing knots or whatever other religious conviction they have. That opinion is extremely important. They know it, and I know it, and a lot of people know it. I would wager that they will be willing to bend a great deal with David or whoever on David's side to forestall that decision from coming down. Now, so it wouldn't surprise me if substantial offers were made to David Mayo Group in the Wallersheim case and in that other case to prevent the Ninth Circuit opinion from coming down. Now, if David stands firm, as he should, to get the opinion, which is so valuable, then no matter what they offer him, the opinion will come down anyway, and it'll do all of you a lot of good. Also, they're looking at problems. The injustices that have accumulated over the years are just accumulating to such a degree that they're almost becoming irresolvable for them. All the cases that have been in litigation for the last five or six 4, 5, or 6 years are all starting to come to trial. There's loads of them currently on the trial calendar. The Wallerstein case is ongoing. The Samuels hearing is probably going to take place within the next 45 days up in Oregon. The Burden and McLean and Wakefield cases in Tampa are going forward. There's eight cases in Boston that are going forward. The Homer's case is on the next January of 87 trial list. The Armstrong case is on the September 1986 trial list, a case they're desperately afraid of. The Burden case, they're spending fortunes to defend the Tonya Burden case. And the reason is very simple, as is L. Ron Hubbard fled Hemet, California in late February, early March 1980. The church learned in late 1979 that Tonya Burden came to me. They learned that in late January she appeared before a grand jury in New York of 1980. She filed an affidavit in the Van Schaik suit in January 1980. As soon as the church learned that Tonya Burden had come to me, so to tell me, Jerry Armstrong, Laurel Sullivan, Dee Dee Riesdorf, Doreen Gillum, and maybe one or two others, Mary Sue Hubbard immediately ordered all the Commodore's messenger logs. And for those of you who are on the ship who know anything about the messengers, the way the system worked, per a particular flag order that escapes me, the messengers were the eyes and ears of Ron and the mouthpiece of Ron. When Ron gave an order, it went through a messenger. It was just as if Ron himself had given the order. And, for example, Hannah would probably know this. The messengers were all recorded in the CMO logs. Mary Sue Hubbard immediately ordered all of the CMO logs to be gone through. For every message that Tonya Burden had delivered at Dunedin and on board the ship, the logs were then taken out and buried, or destroyed in some cases, on the premises out in La Quinta or at Hema. And the reasons are obvious. Those logs are a descriptive, telltale revelation of the involvement of a 15-year-old girl when she should have been in math class, geography class, literature class, coding and decoding telexes per the OWL code, the Eagle code, etc., for operations in Snow White, which she didn't even know. I mean, they were double and triple and quadruple coded. She didn't even know the GO code. She did some CMO codes. They were translated into GO codes, and she didn't even... But she knew that they pertained to things such as Snow White, the nature of which she didn't even know. Freakout, Vanguard, Goldmine, Taco Less, Keeler 1, Keeler 2. So they're involving this 15-year-old girl with an 8th grade education. I mean, just think of this. I mean, everyone has a right, particularly in our society, to be educated, to get a high school degree. They're involving, unwittingly, this 15-year-old girl when she should be, you know, out learning what a teenage girl learns about, doing the things that a teenage girl does, going to school, in a conspiracy to infiltrate the United States government, to frame people, working her 12 to 18 hours a day, when she protests throwing her in the EPF or the RPF or the galley, whenever she begins to natter about anything, having her dress and undress L. Ron Hubbard with all these other young girls around, dressed in halters and shorts that were designed by L. Ron Hubbard. I mean, it's wrong to take a little girl's life, pay her $2.54 per week or $7 per week, or later $17 per week, have her doing these things. And then when she begins to realize after she gets thrown in the RPF, in Florida, and is living in a corridor, on the floor of a corridor, and is being security checked and given sure stories every time she leaves the ship, or before the RPF, but when she leaves the ship, sure stories to lie to government officials, in security check when she goes and leaves, and signing $50,000 promissory notes, or $5,000 promissory notes. And then when she wants to leave, you know, when she psychologically, emotionally, and mentally can no longer withstand this anymore, and she realizes that this just doesn't make sense, you know, the innate instincts of a young child is saying to herself, these sure stories, these lies, all these things we're supposed to be standing for, and all these things that are really occurring, and to have me living on this floor, when where all this money is going, this doesn't make sense. So she blows. She has to literally escape. As anyone who was in the RPF in Clearwater in 1977 knows, it's an escape. They had guards. They didn't want you to leave. They tried to prevent you from leaving. They security checked you. They did everything to talk you out of it. They kept your possessions. They went through your possessions to take out Scientology documents. Everyone who ever went through it knows that what I'm telling you is the absolute fact. And to tell these people repeatedly that the only reason that they're even thinking this way is they have overts against Ron or overts against the organization. When you're dealing with a, you know, a 17-year-old kid who doesn't have overts in reality against anywhere, anyone. I mean, maybe she's, you know, lied a little bit, or maybe she's got some adolescent indiscretions, or, you know, maybe she, you know, kissed a boy or something. But to continually feed and heap on this mind that the reason she's nattering about these things and has these feelings and is because she's got overt and withholds is wrong. And so then when she wants to leave and has to escape from this corridor, and she runs back to her home in Las Vegas, and the next thing you know, two CMO personnel show up and HC her out of there and take her to L.A., lock her in a room, security check her, have her sign a $50,000 promissory note, and then send her a $61,000 freeloader bill after she's been working 12 to 18 hours a day for 5 years of her teenage life for $2.54, while millions of dollars are being used to frame Michael Flynn's, Paulette Cooper's, infiltrate federal offices. Under any frame of reference in any society in the world, that's wrong. They know it, I know it, and they're very concerned about the case. So what are they defending the case on? The same thing they've always done. Attack Tonya Burden. Tonya Burden's a liar. Tonya Burden's a drug addict. Tonya Burden's sexually promiscuous. Do the same things they've always done. Go to newspapers. Bring her overts and withholds. Carol Garrity from the Guardian's office, as soon as she filed suit, right down to the Las Vegas Review-Journal, stacked that thick of all Tonya's overts and withholds about all her sexual activity, which was, her sexual activity, it's just absurd. I mean, that type of conduct is so reprehensible that these people know that after 6 years of litigation, it's all coming together, the case is going to be tried. They're afraid of Tonya's case, they're afraid of the government investigation into the enormous L. Ron Hubbard, and RRF, and all those things, and the Wallersheim case, and the Samuels case, and making them separate, as I said in the speech, aside from what you think about Martin, making him separate from his wife and kids, you know, using the finance dictatorship to wipe him out. You know, it's just a course of conduct that is so aberrational. They, in their hearts, know that they've got the overts and withholds, and they're now running around trying to reduce the penalty that they should have to pay by going to Paulette Cooper's, offering $400,000, trying to procure false affidavits a la Tamimi's. And it's wrong. And you people should join together, and you should make the management give you all of the facts of the last 12 to 15 years of everything that's gone down. Anything less is not justice. I think that answers your question. Maybe you have more specifics, I don't know, but that's why they're doing this right now. This is all coming down around their head.